Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Today, it is my pleasure to have who I consider to be my brother from another mother, Tony Lynch from Fort Collins, Colorado. Tony Lynch is the founder of the nonprofit Memories of Us LTD, Grief Support for Men, the Global Grief Network, and host of the Grief Let's Talk About It podcast. He started Memories of Us in 2019 after experiencing some significant losses, leaving him with almost no family and no one to help navigate this experience. Tony's grief became heavy and conflicting. On one hand, he was taught to suppress and not express, and on the other hand, his heart was torn into a million pieces. Eventually, with the choices he was making, he lost everything and planned out his suicide. He did finally seek help, only to find that there's little or no support for men. He soon realized the importance of having a place where men can express their feelings, talk openly, but most importantly, be supported by other men who have had similar experiences. He's got a lot of different irons in the fire, and he's doing a lot to really, really make an impact in the grief world. He is my prettier brother from another mother, only because of the fact that he's got the platform today. Otherwise, if I was on his podcast, he'd be telling me I was his prettier brother from another mother. So with that, Tony, my friend, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. I've been wanting to do this with you for a long time.
Brother, it is my pleasure to be here. And you're absolutely right. You know, for those who know us and know that they've seen you on the panel discussion, you would be the prettier brother on the platform. But it is my honor, brother. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. We don't usually script conversations. We get it going on a topic and it just evolves from there. But just to get the conversation going, I'm going to ask you a standard question that I ask all of my contributors to the podcast. Tell our viewers, our listeners, about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions.
Oh, man, you know, that's a deep one, because my actual journey started when I was six. You know, I was molested by my neighbor's son. His mom and my mom was best of friends. And that sparked that movement. After it happened, I told my family, you know, what had happened, and no one believed me. So, you know, I thought to myself, like, well, since no one believes me, I'm going to have to do something. So then when it happened again, I said, you know what? No more. No one's ever going to hurt me again. And I made that promise. I got a 4-year-old sister at the time. I said, no one's ever going to hurt me. No one's ever going to hurt her. So when it almost happened again, I stabbed a guy and I stuck a knife in his stomach. And what it did, it proved exactly what I had thought. I'm going to have to save myself. But I learned at that age, at a very early age, no one's going to come and save me. And I'm going to have to survive in this world. At a very early age, I learned how to maneuver. I learned how to be around different people. And the reality of it was, I had been thrown into a world, a very, very dark, dangerous world, where people were capable of doing really bad things to people. And from the age of 6 to around 11 years old, I was your normal kid. Not quite normal. You know, I was very quiet. I was very artistic. I loved to draw comic books, right? You know, I loved cartoons. I loved playing with toys. But on the other side, I was a very dark, protective older brother. And I carried that with me. And then I got introduced into selling drugs, right? You know, and now I knew, because growing up in a household that I grew up in, my mother wasn't going to have that. You know what I'm saying? My mother was, she was a very heavy-handed individual. And she used to whip my butts. I can't remember a day that didn't go by I didn't get my butt whipped at least 2 to 3 times out of the day. Go to school, come home, you know, get your butt whipped. You know, mom loved me, but I realized I was the oldest child. I was the experiment, you know, till they got it right. The discipline that came behind it could be looked at as abuse, right? Because when you're getting your butt whipped like that, and my mom stopped using the belt with me a long time ago, and she put them up right here. My father was in the picture. My father didn't really put his hands on me because I watched my mother knock him out. And I told him, I said, you put your hands on, let me knock you out like mama did. So from the age of 11 to the age of 14, almost 15, I sold drugs, got really good at it. Got really big too, and I didn't even realize it, dealing with all kinds of people, Jamaicans, cops, lawyers, judges, you think, you know, you name it, I was dealing with them. And I was selling guns at the time as well. Started teeter-tottering within the gangs. And I wasn't a full gang member at that time. And then the one incident that really changed the way I saw the gang. Yeah, I was sitting out with a buddy of mine. We was, you know, drinking on some beer and smoking on some weed and things like that. And the neighborhood was, you know, it was busy, but it wasn't as busy as usual, right? And I began to notice some cars driving in the neighborhood that really shouldn't have been there, right? And I remember I was facing one way and had a blood in my hand. I went to go hand it to my buddy and I'm handing it like this, you know, and I'm not paying attention. I'm watching one way and I heard a shot. And as I'm turning around, I experienced my buddy's face hit me in mine. So the shot had hit him in his head and blew out the other side of his face, smacked me in my face. And I was like, whoa. And so I turned around to see him laying on the ground, you know, like it was crazy. And then from there was my first shootout. And it does something to an individual. It really does. It does something to an individual. You know, you tend to turn into something different in order, because now your survival instincts have to kick in. Because now that reality is you're going to die. Whether it be today or, you know what I'm saying, 10 years from now, but you're going to die. And this is reality. There's people out here killing people. This is what you're into now. What are you going to do? You're either going to have to learn how to survive, or you might as well throw your hands up in the air and say, go ahead, kill me now. I chose to survive. I realized that I was no longer my mama's boy, but in my mama's eyes, I was still her baby boy. I was the straight A student in school. I was my sister's protector, but I knew I had to leave. You know, I wasn't going to let my mama see me die. If I was going to die, I was going to die somewhere else, you know, and I could carry this with me because no one really knows. I was good at hiding. And so at the age of 15, I left home, went to Washington, D.C. for 2 years. Best time of my life, you're right, you know. No worries, man. I was, you know, I was boxing and I was teaching martial arts. I got into lifting weights. I was playing football. I mean, I was having a blast, man. You know, I was finally drawing again. So I used to draw for the local newspaper in Washington, D.C. for the Job Corps, worked at the U.S. Department of Labor, and it was a good time. And then early 1992, the girlfriend that I had at that time got pregnant. And I said, you know what? I'm not going back. I'm not going back home. And she goes, well, I have a mom that lives in Colorado. We can move up there and everything. I said, okay. So what ended up happening is that I ended up going back home. And when she got out of Job Corps, she joined me. We had our oldest daughter. And then we was there maybe about two, maybe 3 months, and then we moved to Colorado in 1992. I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to be a father. I'm gonna leave all of this stuff behind. And as life would have it, that wasn't the path that was chosen for me. I think my daughter was 6 months at the time. We had been going back to her mom's house. We're walking down the street, and over off the right, you know, there's some guys playing basketball. You know, I heard the language. I'm just not saying anything. I have on a maroon outfit, and one of the guys see me, and he runs over and starts to talk really, really crazy. And I'm looking at him. I'm paying him no never mind, because he doesn't know that I'm a Crip, right? He thinks I'm a rival. So the man tells me, he's talking to me off on the side. And he tells me, I'll kill you, man. I'll smoke you and this, that, and another. I was just laughing at him, right? Because you're still not a threat to me. When he moved in front of me, he was in between me and my family. And I warned him. I was like, my man, if I was you, I would move. We're just trying to go home. Oh, man, just that, forget you and your family. Okay. Well, I tell you what, since you don't want to move, I'm going to move you. And I beat that man within an inch of his life. And I had him down on the ground and finally take off my shirt, and I'm tattooed and everything, you know. So his buddies run over there, and they looking like they were going to do something. So I put my foot on his neck. I said, you guys come up, I'll break his neck. And they're looking. They was like, oh, man, oh, you want a bus and this, that, and that. So that whole tone had changed with me, right? And they was like, oh, man, it's all good. We didn't know. Where you from? And this, that, and another. And I realized, right then and there, I was going to have to complete this part of my journey. I was going to have to. So I let the man up. He apologized. I walked home. My daughter's mom is looking at me at that time. And the look in her eyes, I knew right then and there I was going to have to let them go. This life is not going to let me go. It's going to be a part of my journey that I may not live through. And so I told her, I said, look, why don't you take my daughter and y'all get as far as from me, far away from me as you possibly can. That was 1992. And then from there, just like a good little soldier, I dove back into it. And I was so deep, it wasn't even funny anymore. You know, here I am, no family, no one, walking the streets of Colorado, back into the gangs. Oh my God, man, it was crazy. I'm back hanging out with the homies and, you know, well, at least the homies in Colorado, and selling drugs, drinking, you know, just all kinds of crazy stuff. But it wasn't all bad, right? It was crazy. It was all crazy, but it wasn't all bad. And in 1994, I get arrested. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, no biggie. I've never been, you know, I'm an adult now, right? They fast-tracked me, and they convicted me on a crime I never committed. They convicted me of possession of crack cocaine of a controlled substance. Gave me 5 years, first ever adult felony. So from 1994 to 1999, I was in prison. I get out and I go right back to the streets. This is 1999. And two significant things happened in that moment. The people that I was hanging out with decided to set me up to get me killed at a New Year's party. My gut said, leave. And I just remember I left. I walked out the back door, walked around at the time. The girl that I was seeing picked me up and we drove off, only to find out 2 days later that after I left, well, as I was leaving, there was a group of Bloods or rivals that was coming down the stairs at the time. And they walked past all of my friends. They even asked them, where's Screwball? Oh, he's downstairs in the basement. And they walked past him, probably about 10, 12 of them walked past him, coming down in the basement, looking for him. And they end up hanging out there while I'm gone. I find this out 2 days later. And it came to me from another buddy of mine to say, hey, man, I thought you was dead. I'm like, what do you mean? Oh, man, you know, when you was at that party, right? Such and such and such and such set you up. Hold on, man. You talking about the homies? They're like, yeah, man, the same people that you breaking bread with set you up. It was going to kill you. Said, all right. That's good. Now I know. So I finally run across him. I said, y'all was going to have me killed? All right. Not a problem. Just remember, whatever happens to you is on you. Y'all started this. You started this. I thought we was good. But since we not, well, I'm going to go to war with y'all too. And shortly after that, I was shot 22 times and I survived. So now I'm in a hospital and the other side of the homies came in, people that I was cool with that was from different hoods and things like that came through and they heard about what had happened. I said, well, I'm about to tear Colorado up. They have no idea what they just unleashed. And I ended up leaving the hospital, and for six months, I went to war with these people, so unadulterated, you name it, I was doing that. I was robbing them, I was beating them with baseball bats, I was shooting at them, but they gave it back in turn, But I had an issue, man. I had a chip on my shoulder that, if you would have met me back then, you'd have been like, holy crap, what is wrong with this dude? I just didn't care. I just didn't care. And I wasn't going to run home, right? So that finally died down. And I just remember I was so tired, Dave. I said, I don't want to do this no more. I don't want to do it. So I ended up going to, end up calling a meeting with the homies, the big homies. And I told them, I said, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. So, of course, their words to me were, well, there's only one way out, Tony. Or, back then they called me Screwball. There's only one way out, Screwball. I said, yeah, I know. I pulled out my gun. I gave it to him. I said, there's a hollow point in the chain. Either which way it goes, I'm done. I'm not afraid to die. Let's finish this. But either which way it goes, I'm done. And so they thought about it for a minute and made the best decision that they can ever make. They said, we'll let you go. But whatever happens to you out there, you're on your own. So I left the hood. I left the gangs. And I went out on the streets and now I'm thinking to myself, like, what am I supposed to do? Right? What am I supposed to do now? Well, 3 days into that, sleeping out on the streets, you realize you're homeless, man. What are you going to do? And I think something inside of me said, give up. Just be done. Just go with it. Right? It'll be over soon. And for the next 2.5 years, I was a true homeless guy, sleeping in and out of trash cans, breaking into people's cars on cold nights, to sleep in their backseat and disappear in the morning before they get up and go to work. It was a true experience, right? One day I was sitting under the bridge with some other homeless guys. It was like a scene out of the movies, right? You know, we got the iron trash can, you know, we got the wood in there. We just started a fire, you know, and it's blowing snow, right? It is blowing snow out here. It's a complete blizzard, whiteout, right? And I'm going, well, you know, and I'm out here. You got to remember, man, 2.5 years, I ain't got nothing, right? I got the clothes on my back and that's it. I hadn't eaten anything. And here I am out here with this little short sleeve shirt on. And there was another homeless guy under there. And he looks at me. And Dave, I could have tore this man's head apart for asking me this question. This older guy looked at me and said, why are you here? And automatically, I mean, it doesn't sound so bad, right? But in my mind was, who are you to be asking why are you here? Man, you don't know me. So the old me was coming out, but then I realized, you got to cut that out. You got no pride no more. What are you doing? You are homeless. The man asked you a straightforward question. Why are you here? And I had no answer for him. And he looked at me. He goes, man, it's cold out here. Take my jacket. So I got a homeless dude, you know, looking out for me. And, so afterwards, we're laying down, I'm trying to keep warm, you know, keep out the snow and everything. There's a few other people underneath and, you know, laying down and carrying on. And Dave, I swear, man, just as clear as I'm talking to you, man, this voice said, get up. And I jump up and I'm looking around because I'm thinking there's somebody else out underneath the bridge with us, right? And I get up and there's nobody there. Everybody that was there was asleep. Looking around, and the voice said, walk this way. And I just remember I had this feeling of warmth that came across me that I could not tell you. I just could not tell you. And I started to turn around, and once I got to a certain place, it goes, stop, walk this way. And I walked. Now, mind you, it's still blowing snow. It is cold outside, and I only have on a tank top. And I am walking, and it feels like I'm walking forever, but I'm not tired. I'm just walking. You know, I'm asking this voice, will you want me to stop? Keep walking. So I walk and look like, will you want me to stop? Keep walking. And hours go by, and finally I get to this place, and the voice said, stop. And I stopped them looking around. I'm clear on the other side of town now. I didn't even know this place even existed. I really didn't, right? And so I'm sitting there. I'm like, well, what am I supposed to do? And I look over. The voice is no longer there. The voice is no longer there. Now, mind you, I got no money in my pocket. I got nothing, right? You know, I'm homeless. I am truly homeless. And I just remember on one side of the street, there's like a barn, a couple of hotels, you know, and on the side of the street that I'm on my left-hand side, there was a Safeway. So I said, you know what? I'm going to go sit under the little awning over here at Safeway, and I'll figure it out when the sun comes up. But how did I get here, right? Because I don't know where I'm at. I don't know nothing about this place. I'm homeless. I'm tired. Where am I supposed to go? So I sat there for a minute, and I tucked my arms inside of my shirt and everything because I'm starting to get a little chilly, right? You know, and as I'm doing this, I look over on behind this building, this is where I'm sitting at in the Safeway. I see people start to come out the trees and the bushes and things like that. And they go into this building, right? And I can hear them talking. So I'm thinking to myself, I wonder if that's a kitchen, right? You know? Where you can go grab something to eat. It's been more than a few days for me, right? And I'm thinking to myself, maybe I can go over and grab something to eat or at least go check it out, right? Let me go figure out some other things. And I go over here, and Dave, when I tell you life played this beautiful thing on me, I go there and there's this labor ready. You work the day, get paid the day type thing, right? So mind you, you know, I'm thinking to myself, like, I got nothing else to lose. I might as well go in, right? And you know, and so I walk up there and the lady explains to me, you know, what they do. And she says, fill out the application. So fill out the application and everything. I give her all of my information. I give it back to her. And I'm drinking some coffee now, you know, because now I'm inside of a building with people just like me. And so I'm drinking on my coffee and I hear, Tony Lynch, come on up here, right? And I go up there, we got a ticket for you today. What? Yeah, we got a ticket for you. How do you feel about doing this? I was like, it don't matter to me. Just I'll go. Right. And I went out that day. I made $48. So we come back and I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to go over here to this hotel room, see how much the room is going to cost. You know, for two things. I want to see how much it's going to cost daily and see how much it's going to cost per week, you know, and see what I can do to save up this money. And I go over there, they tell me, I was like, okay, well, I don't have enough. So what I would rather do, I would rather save up some money for a week. And that way I can get into a hotel room at least for a week. So I was like, well, I got $48. What am I, I'm going to take eight of this and go grab something to eat, right? You know, so I go grab something to eat, you know, from the Safeway. And I save up this money. I go get a hotel room. And Dave, when I tell you, it was the best experience in the world, right? Things that you take for granted that had been taken away from me for so long. Get into this hotel room, and the first thing that I do, I run this bath water, right? You know, and I jump in there. It's nice and warm, man. And I got a bed. I got a TV. I just cried. I got a little extra money in my pocket, you know, so I figured I'd grab something to eat. But then it dawned on me, go buy yourself some clothes. Go buy yourself a couple pairs of jeans, some socks, some underwear, those for toothpaste, right? Some body wash. Go buy those things, Tony. You got a little money left in your pockets. You got a steady ticket. It's not like that you're not going to have money. You got money coming in now, you know? So I go and I jump on the bus. I head out to Walmart, buy my clothes, buy me some hygiene products, comb, because I had long hair at the time, you know, back then. And I never said anything, you know, but it was the best feeling in the world to not feel ashamed. I mean, brother, look, man, I felt so ashamed. I didn't even want to call my mother no more. I didn't want my family to know what was going on with. I really didn't. I didn't want them to worry about me. But I knew I had to figure it out, you know. And so I did. And I would tell you, you know, this is where things, you know, it life pivoted on me again, right? You know, so now I'm doing this, you know, I'm doing okay for myself, right? You know, I'm not making Vuku's load of money, but I'm making a little money. I'm surviving, you know. I got a hotel room and things like that, and the people are really cool. And then I go into the place one day, because that was my go-to after that. And they were like, hey, Tom, we got a ticket that pays $119 a day. We want to put you on for the next 6 months. I said, $119 a day. Now I'm quick with math, right? You know what I'm saying? I was like, yeah, most definitely. I would love to do that, right? That's over $3,000 a month in my pocket. Mm-hmm. I'm only paying $1,500 for the hotel room, right? That's okay, yeah. That puts a little extra money in my pocket, right? And so I started doing that. Now, Dave, I got ahead of myself because I was like, you know what? I'm going to go next door to the bar, have a drink, play some pool. Life came back and said, hey, remember all that stuff that you ran away from? Karma's about to come back and get you, right? I had to get drinking. And sure enough, I started hanging out with people. Now that I know, because I was one, that were alcoholics. And that's all that it took. These guys were like, hey, come stay with us, man. You know,
Yeah, we got a room. You can rent the room from us, man. We can drink all the time, go to work. And I did. And still skeptical. And sure enough, for good reason. Because life said, remember all that stuff that you got? Easy come, easy go, right? Survival of the fittest. That's what you said, Tony. Survival of the fittest. Well, here we go. I end up losing everything. All because I couldn't put down the bottle. The people, I can blame the people that I was with, but I'm responsible for my own actions. And I lost everything. Lost everything. But this time, you know, I had developed some skills to help me get out of that situation a lot faster than, you know, 2.5 years. So about, I would say about 3, 4, maybe 5 months go by, you know, gathering up some more money, you know, get back into a hotel. I meet this guy. He's like, man, I want to introduce you to my family, right? You know, he introduces me to his family. We met on the job site because I was still doing construction and things like that. And, you know, I just knew. I just knew. So he introduces me to his family. His family's like, hey, why don't you come live up here with us? They lived in a trailer park. I was thinking to myself, like, nope. Not doing it. I don't trust nobody no more. I don't trust nobody.
Yeah, that's one of the things we've talked about is one is your innate will to survive and how that developed for you, and also how hypervigilant you are going into any new situation with the, you know, looking at how everything is situated and also being very cautious in terms of how much trust you give initially to an individual and allowing that to manifest over time. And I think It's also a healthy way to do that because you just can't jump in without looking to the pool without looking to see how much water is in it first. You check it out and then decide how far you want to dive in. So that's the one thing that I didn't mean to interrupt you with that, but I had
you're totally fine. Yeah. Because you're absolutely right, right? When you come from a place where I've come from and have people screw you over, you tend to become very observant about how people talk, one.
Yep.
And what they do, their actions, two. Because not everybody has the best intentions for you. And when you've been screwed over from people that say that they love you so many times, you have to be careful of that word when people say, or when people are saying, hey, I want to help you and this, that, and other, you know. You have to be careful of that because, you know, you want to help me for, and what do you want in return? You know, am I willing to pay this price? Now, you got to remember, I still have the mentality of a game bank. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in my mind was, yeah, the next person that tries to get me, I'm just going to rob you or either worse, you know? And so, but that was what I carried inside of me. You know, I had trust issues out the yin yang, you know. Oh, yeah. That's why I had all kinds of failed relationships. You know, who can you trust in this world, right? Especially when that's all you've been shown is just the mistreatment. Mm-hmm. That's all I knew was like, I'm not going to allow you to hurt me. Even if I have the smallest inclination that you are, man, the thing that I'm going to do to you is going to make the papers. I promise. That's all you ever know.
And your will and your instinct to survive was ingrained at such a young age. I can just imagine that became your identity and that your will to survive, your survive first mentality probably in some way maybe contributed to you not developing the intimacy and relationships that you would hope to, because I mean, you grew up, survival was normal. You know, this is the normal way that we're going to operate in the world. It's not about thriving. It's not about connecting to relationships. It's about surviving moment to moment, preserving, like I said, survival of the fittest.
Yeah. You said it right there. Survival of the fittest, right? And I realized no matter where I went, that was just my life, you know, and that's all I knew. But I did. I took a chance, and I moved in with this family, beautiful family. They say, look, we don't want nothing from you. You know, we just give you a hand up if you would like. I've never had that sort of kindness before, you know. So, of course, I'm skeptical. Now here's the funny part. I am having a hard time trusting them, and they got me around their kids. They got, you know, and all kinds of stuff, right? And I'm like, and then they introduced me to their friends, of course, right? And their friends are just as cool as they are, right? And I end up getting another job, moving furniture. So I started subcontracting. I was making $22 an hour, good times back then. And then life said, nope, I got something else for you. And I had been hanging out with some bounty hunters, and they come to me one night. They say, hey, man, we're looking for somebody. We know that you know him. Can you help us find him? At first, I was like, no, man, I'm not about to do that. And they said, come on, man, look, we've been having a hard time finding this dude. This dude is on the run for murder. And I was like, normally, that's not my business. But then they was like, they knew how to touch me. They was like, he's on the murder for killing a little kid. Really? I always have a rule in my life. No women, no children. No women, no children. You don't hurt children, you don't hurt women. So when they told me that, I said, you know what? I can help you out. That night, we go over to a place and we wait. They take me right back to the hood, right back. That night, I get arrested and I go to county for 6 months. I lose everything again. I lost everything again. So now, I get out. I got nothing. Don't know what I'm supposed to do from that point on. I'm back in the hood. Look around, the same thing I kept trying to run away from, Dave. The same exact thing, but I'm back in the hood again. And this time I said, you know what? No more. I'm getting everybody. You want me to survive in this world? Okay, you got me now. You got me. This is what you want. You got me. And that thing came back. I started back robbing people again. I started back selling drugs. I started back game banging. But something didn't sit right with me. As natural as that part of my life was, I said, you know what? I got options now. I called the old job back and I said, look, you know, they was like, you back? I was like, yeah, come on to work. What? I'm not fired. They was like, no, come on back to work, Tony. So I went back to moving furniture. And I ended up meeting another guy. And the guy said, now, this is where it starts to sound very familiar, right? You know, it's that deja vu type thing. Mm-hmm. He said, man, let me introduce you to my friend, man. He owns a house over here. So he introduces James to me. James became one of my really good friends. And James said, where you living at? I said, right now, living out on the streets. He's like, no. He goes, man, I got a room in a garage. He goes, how's your financial situation? I said, I work a job and everything. He goes, I tell you what, I'll rent that room out to you for $250 a month. What do you think about that? I cook every night and everything. You know, I got my daughter that lives over here. You know, we can have a couple beers. I'm still not putting two together about the alcoholic thing, right? And me and James, we were like best friends, man. So we go to work during the weekend, Friday and Saturday, we went to the bars. And a lot of times we just got drunk, played pool, didn't get ourselves in no trouble, right? But we used to drink all the time. And then Sunday morning, we went to church. Like, we're going to go out here and mess up on these 2 days right here. And then we're going to go and sit in church on this day right here. Right. And we did that for the longest time. And I'm telling you, life got really good, and I was laughing again. And you know, I still had trust issues, and it was good, man. We went to the clubs. You know, I started a part of this journey. I started womanizing. Right, I had like 7 or 8 women that I was sleeping with at any given time, and you know, life was crazy. Life was definitely crazy, but it was fun. I was safe for the first time in my life. I felt safe. But then it got better, right? I made another guy through James, and a guy comes up to me. He goes, "Tone, I'm not quite sure your situation here and everything, you know, but I just want to give you this opportunity. I have a house down in Denver. It's a 1.5 bedroom, you know, ranch style. It has a basement to it, huge yard, dog run, you know, $550 a month." So I ended up moving into this house. I was in my 30s, early 30s, around 31, 32 when this happened. And it's the first time in my life that I had something that was mine. I can't even explain that, man. You know, here I am. No one's ever taught me any of this stuff. And then probably about 6 months of living over there, maybe a little bit longer. I mean, I was out doing my thing, you know, going to the club as usual, you know, having one night stands, things like that, you know, just being a man. One night I was out, picked up this girl, figured one night stand. She didn't go anywhere. She just stuck around, right? And she ended up getting pregnant. 2006, she gave birth to our son, Jake, December 18th, 2006. I'm thinking to myself, okay, we're going to do this again. I'm going to be a good father. I'm going to be a really good father. I want to give this kid everything that I didn't have. And she goes, "You know what? I live in Loveland, Colorado. I'm about to purchase this condo. You should move up here with me." Think to myself, okay, I'm away from everything. I was lied to. Not the fact that she wanted me to move in, because that was, that's, she didn't want that, right? And she's pregnant. And I tell my friends, I was like, "Hey, I'm moving to Loveland, man." You know, and I doubted it at first. I was like, "I don't know if I want to." And my buddies was like, "Yeah, man, hey, get your butt on up there, be a father, and this, that, and another. We can always come visit you," right? So about 6 months into the pregnancy, she began to change up a little bit more aggressive with her words. Just everything about her started to change. And I'm thinking to myself, maybe it's the pregnancy. Right? When she gave birth, I realized it wasn't a pregnancy, it was her. She had tricked me into moving in with her. And so I was like, So now I'm thinking to myself, what am I supposed to do, right? I'm away from everything else that I know. And you know, she had the audacity to tell me, she goes, "What are you going to do? Leave me? I got you away from all your friends. Where are you going to go?" I said, "Man, not this." And life said, "Yeah, here we go." And so it got so bad, Dave, I left. And at that time I was working, I was doing commercial refrigeration work, HVAC. And I left and I jumped into my work van and I left and I was homeless again. This time, a lot shorter. It was probably about 2 or 3 months I was homeless. I lost everything because I had to leave her, right? And so now, you know, and the same person that was sitting up here doing all of this stuff helped me get into my first apartment in Loveland, right? And so now I'm like, okay, I got a place. You know, I can see my son, this, that, and another. And when she realized that I wasn't coming back to her, Oh my God, Dave. This woman got me evicted out of the place that she got me in, told me that I was never going to see my son again. She goes, we're going to court, you know, but I still want you to pay me money to take care of him. And so she got me evicted out of my place. She got me fired from my job. She got me fired from 4 jobs, got me evicted out of 2 places, and had 2 of my vehicles repossessed. Mm-hmm. All, yeah. And then she took me to court. So now we have that, right? So for 2.5 years, you know, I'm homeless now, right? You know, but I'm finding different places to stay. I got up some pretty decent people that was helping me out. And finally, you know, I didn't know what a narcissist was, right? Talk about naive. As smart as I thought that I was, I still didn't know what a narcissist was, right? Somebody had to explain this to me. They was like, man, she's a narcissist. Mm-hmm. Like, what? And back in the day, we didn't have the smartphones. You had to go to the encyclopedia, narcissist. And I looked, I was like, is that what that? Oh, no. They were like, yep. So I had different things that I can do. I started fishing real, you know, a lot back then. And so I was able to disappear, go fish or whatever. And back then, the lakes were open 24 hours a day. So I was always able to go out, you know. It wasn't like I was homeless, but I was, you know. As long as I have my fishing poles and an open lake, I can go sit down by the lake. I can always take a little nap or something like that till the sun comes up. Nobody really bothered me, right? And the crazy part about it is, Dave, I was the only Black person. Well, I was one of 4 Black people that lived in Loveland at the time.
But yeah, because at the time, there wasn't much diversity in Loveland.
No.
Yeah, there wasn't much diversity at all. So can I ask you a question? Just one thing that came into my head.
Yeah.
Was there ever a point when you had all these starts and stops, when things started looking like they were going to really be going well for you, and then all of a sudden the rug got pulled out again, and then you had an upswing and the rug got pulled out again? Did you ever think of just saying, screw it, I'm done?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Every time. When I realized that nothing was going to change in my life. I told myself, I said, I'm done. But see, I was afraid to take my life. So what I did, I set myself up.
How close did you come to taking your life? How close did you, I know you had a plan and probably a very specific
plan. The plan came later, but this is an earlier one where I had a gun. Remember I told you I went back to the streets and everything. So I went back to the streets. This is that time period when I was back then. And my gun had jammed up. And for some odd reason, it wasn't working. So I was like, you know what? All right. This is what I'm going to do. See, I was tired. And I thought to myself, I got enemies. Let's put 2 and 2 together. I'm going to get one of them to kill me. Right? And so that following day, I ended up running across this guy who happened to be a blood. And I knew the guy. I knew that he was known for shooting and killing people and things like that. And so I was like, I got him. I got you. Right. You know, so we had some words and I told him, I said, let's not talk. Let's just do our thing. He goes, man, I'm not going to fight you. When he said that, punched him. Boom. We get into it. I'm beating him and things like that. And when I turned my back, I knew what he was going to do. He was going to shoot me in my back. And there was a crowd of people out, right? And I knew he didn't care, just like I did, right? It's part of the game. It's part of the rules of this thing that we do called game bang. You know what I'm saying? You're going to die. Somebody's going to kill you. I already knew. I'm not afraid to die. I just was afraid of taking my life at the time. And so when I turned my back, I heard his gun cock. So now, you know, I got my gun on me. So I know if I turn around fast enough, you know, he's just going to shoot me. I wasn't wrong. wasn't wrong at all. He put a bullet in me, but also put a bullet in him too. My gun started working. That wasn't supposed to happen. So he ended up shooting me. I ended up shooting him. We both survived. So that was that. That was the first time that I have actually thought about taking my life, but not really taking my life. You know. So you know, when we fast forward, you know, my son is born. You know, going through this thing, going through the courts and everything like that. Been stripped of everything. Life would have it again. End up dating someone. Right. So this is where it starts to get really good for me. Right. You know, I started dating someone and she says, you should move in with me. What? Yeah. Move in with me. Right. What else are you doing, Tony? She had a 2-bedroom duplex.
Yeah.
I'm moving there with her. And Dave, 3 months after I moved in, she moved out and went to another state. It's like, you can keep the place.
Wow, you had all these guardian angels. You had all these guardian angels in the form of the homeless guy.
Right.
The voice that you heard in your head, you know, we look back now, it's probably another guardian angel or a spirit guide or an ancient ancestry you didn't even know about. To all these individuals that were just willing to give you stuff.
Yeah.
To me, regardless of whatever bad you saw in yourself or whatever, you know, esteem issues you were dealing with or not worthy enough issues you were dealing with, somebody always saw something in you that you never saw in yourself. And I think that got you taking another step forward and another step forward. By all rights, you should have been dead. When that blood, you should have been dead. I mean, these guys don't miss. There's a mission that the good Lord or the universe had for you, because man, you could have died 100 times or 1,000 times, but you didn't. You're still here. You're still here because you got work to do.
But see, I didn't know that at the time. See, what I realized that when you're in it, you never see it, right? Because you're the one that's in it.
Yep.
Right. And we talked about this, right? When I realized, you know, now I'm in this place, and as life would have it, I end up, you know, it changed around and they finally started to catch her. After everything that I told them that she was doing, no one wanted to believe me. They looked at me like I was the mad dad, right? You know what I'm saying? The disgruntled father. But I ended up getting my son because she messed up, right? Mm-hmm. They found her. Through luck, someone called in on her when she was drunk and being abusive to the kids. So long story short, they took the kids out of the home. They finally contacted me. We go back to court, you know, and it changed. And they said, do you have a place? I said, yes, I do. Mind if we come by and take a look at it? Yes. Yeah. Come on by. Right. Within like another month, I got my son, and it was just me and him. Now, the other side of it was, I don't know how to be a father, let alone be a man. So this is where everything began to change for me, because I wanted to change. I began to pray. I said, look, thank you for this opportunity, but I don't know what I'm doing. Teach me how to be a good man. I have no role models. I have no one to come and tell me that this is what a man's supposed to do or what a father's supposed to be like or anything like that. I have none of these things. But I did have a good guide, though. My spirit guide said, hey, you're going to have to let go of this over here. Right? And I began to do the work, and I began to become a better man. I started cursing. I became this different version of myself. I began to, you know, learn how to mellow myself out. Mm-hmm. And then my son taught me how to be a good father, because I knew that I wanted to be a part of his life. So what is it that I need to do? I went back to moving furniture for another company. And then from there, I was like, I need a better job. So I got my CDL, started driving trash truck, right? You know, and when that happened, the court said, well, you got to do this, that, and another. I said, not a problem. I'll do it. Not a problem. I'll do it. And I did it. And they began to leave me alone. And now I got my son, right? It was like, y'all got to share custody. And she came up as, and like it was supposed to hurt me or something, right? Like after all the crap that she'd have done to me. She was like, I want him to have him every weekend. And I want to pick him up from Wednesday through Thursday. And I want him to have him Friday through Monday. Or and then, you know what I'm saying? And the reason why I say Wednesday through Thursday, because Tuesdays I ended up having to pick him up anyway. I said, okay, not a problem, right? And I tell you, she couldn't have done me any more favors. She really didn't, right? Because I'm like, really? And the judge was like, are you okay with this? I was like, ma'am, look, yeah. See, the thing is, she was like, well, you know, if you want to, we can. I was like, no, I don't want you to adjust nothing. If she's willing to let me have him like that, 50-50 and things like that, I am okay with that. I stop drinking. I don't go to clubs. I go to work all the time. I got to go home. I pay my bills. I keep food in the house. My weekends, I'm usually by myself anyway. Let me have them. Mm-hmm. And the judge said, really? I said, ma'am, the one thing I realized when he was born, being a father is not a part-time job. It's a full-time job.
Yep.
And if she's willing to let me have him, then yes, I'm willing to take this opportunity.
Well, yeah, and the other thing is you took the high road. You could have really insisted on more than 50-50 visitation and probably been justified doing that.
Yeah.
But you took the high road, and for your son, that's something he's going to see. He's going to see that, hey, we can model compromise. Even with people that we really don't align with, we can still compromise and do what is for the greater good. My observation is that there was a paradigm shift for you in that you went from, well, it's about me, and now it's about my son.
Yeah.
And that opened up a whole new level of selflessness for you.
Yeah, it did. And I embraced it, man, you know. Mm-hmm. And then that one little moment right there, I think it was about 3 months or two into the parental agreement, you know. She says, what did she tell me? She goes, hey, it started off with, hey, I'm going to need you to keep him tonight. So now, you know, I not only am I having my parental time, but she's giving me her days too. Right? I got to work tonight. I'll come and pick him up Sunday. And then it got to a point where she went back to the courts and said, you know what? We're just going to do our own thing. And then I ended up having him all the time. And there was times where I wouldn't see her for a month or two. And it was just me and my bubba, right? Me and my bubba. My bubba's teaching me. I'm teaching him. We're growing together. We, you know, and we had a bond that will blow your mind. And I thought to myself, life doesn't get any better than this. For the first time in my life, I finally got the opportunity to prove that I'm not the piece of shit that people thought that I was. That I... You know, that I'm doing something good. I'm being a good father. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. When, you know, we had father and son days, you know, which was Fridays, we go to Applebee's and then Saturday we went to the movies and Chuck E. Cheese. And, you know, Sunday, you know, we went to church and he had play dates, right? Mm-hmm. Throughout the week, he had school, right? So I was good with that. Every time people saw me, they were like, man, you always with your son. And then it got to a point to where if they didn't see me with him, they were like, hey, what? Hold on. Where's the little guy? Right. I was like, oh, he's with his mom. Oh man, I'm not used to seeing you without him. So this is what now I'm feeling good about myself, man. I'm feeling good about myself because people know that I'm the father, right? I'm that guy. You know what I'm saying? When it comes down to it, it's me and my bubba.
And then there was a day that just that all changed. Am I correct?
It is. October 31st, 2015. My son went through this major overdose because his pharmacist mixed his medication wrong. So instead of being out with his friends trick-or-treating, he was at the hospital while my son was fighting his overdose. And for 3 days, I watched my son just go through pure hell. And as a father, as a man, as a parent, that's the most scariest thing that you can ever go through. At least mm-hmm. I thought, right? At least I thought. And they came to us that Sunday night. They said, hey, you know, he's not going to make it. So what do you mean? What do you mean he's not going to make it? Well, we think he has a rare brain disease. Now, this is the mistreatment from the hospital because they misdiagnosed him. Mm-hmm. Only to have him Monday morning wake up, right? And, you know, and he didn't remember nothing. Dad, what are we doing? Oh, my God, Bubba. Oh, my God, man. Come here. Let me hug you. Let me kiss you, man. You know what I'm saying? And my son's looking at me like, I was just asleep, Dad. I was like, you know what? He was. You're absolutely right, man. And I was crying. He was like, what you crying for? His mom was looking at me and she's like, oh my God. Yeah. Now, we took him off all of that medication, And 9 months later, June 14th of 2016, he got sick, right? And that was on a Saturday. He was with me. He was over at the neighbor's house playing, swimming. It was his friend's birthday, you know, and he was just having a good old time swimming and things like that. Sunday morning, he woke up. He wasn't feeling good. I said, okay, it's probably just a stomach bug, right? He couldn't keep nothing down. Laid down next to him, doing a movie, man. I'm just watching some movies and stuff like that. And he was like, I'm in pain. My daddy, my stomach hurt. I said, Bubba, you're going to be okay. You know, just go ahead, go to sleep. I'm going to get you a hot rag. I'm put it on top of your head and, you know, I'm going to call your mom and see if we can't get you some baby medicine, you know, little people medicine, what I like to call it. And he was like, okay, you know. He goes, my friends come over, tell them I can't come out and play today. I'm not feeling well. I say, okay, Bubba, not a problem. So I call his mom and she comes over and she goes, you know, he has a temperature of 102 right now. So she goes, I got to go back to work, but I'll be back. I'll be back to pick him up later on. I said, not a problem. So she comes back, picks him up, takes him over to her house. And she calls me around 1 o'clock in the morning and said, hey, we may have to take him to the hospital. This fever is not breaking. Instead, she calls him back 30 minutes later and she goes, I finally got the fever to break. He's laying down. He's doing good. I finally got him to eat something, you know, got some Pedialyte in him. I said, okay. She goes, I'm going to take him to the family doctor tomorrow. Not a problem. You know, and I humbled her. I definitely humbled her after all the things that she's done to me. Like, no, you will humble yourself. but I learned, she taught me how to forgive too, right? We ended up going to the hospital. I was at work and this was Monday. And I get a call. She goes, hey, they're admitting us to the hospital. I said, say less, what hospital you at? I'm on my way. So I called my job. I said, hey, my son's in the hospital. I got to go. They said, okay, not a problem. We got another driver. Go ahead and do your thing. Okay. I go down and they were trying to pull blood from him, but they couldn't because his blood was coagulating. It had coagulated, right? So they couldn't pull nothing from him. And finally, you know, after 9 hours of being there, almost 11 hours of being there, they said, hey, this is beyond us. We're going to airlift you down to another children's hospital. And they asked my Bubba, they said, are you hurting? He points to his stomach. Yeah, my stomach's hurt. And it's like, okay, we're going to give you some morphine. It's going to put you to sleep. We're going to keep you out of pain, but you'll be okay. He goes, okay. I said, Bubba, I'll see you when you wake up. They airlift us down to this other children's hospital. We get there. Doctors are they're good, man. They're good people, right? The doctor comes up to us and like, what would you like us to do? I said, let's run your tests, figure out what's going on with them so we can get them better, right? I just don't want you using them as a guinea pig. Doctor said, not a problem. So they run tests. He comes back. He goes, I don't know what it is, but I have had this happen. This is verbatim. He goes, I did have this happen one time before, and I lost a little girl. I said, well, we're not going to lose this one. We're definitely not going to lose this one. So what do we need to do? He goes, I want to give him a super antibody, which is going to kill everything in his blood, and then we're going to clean his blood out and put it back in. Not a problem. I said, okay. He goes, you guys okay with that? Yeah. When he wakes up in the morning, it's going to be good. You guys can take him home. Not a problem. So they go back here. Everything's seemingly fine. I'm talking to his mom. She goes, what do you want to do? I said, I'm getting out of Colorado. I'm taking my son. She goes, well, just let me know. We don't have to live together, but I don't want you, you know, I want to be where you guys are at because I want to be a part of his life. I'll let you raise him. Just let me be a part of his life. I said, not a problem. We can do that. So we're about 5 minutes into the procedure. The doctor comes out, says everything is going good. We're about to start the transfusion. He started the transfusion. He coded. And so they called a code blue. And I just remember nurses from every floor running into the room. I see the chaos. Man, life slowed down. And I'm watching this. And I'm like, I'm looking at his mother. And she was like, no, 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 no. I'm like, what do you mean? No. She goes, this is a cold. I was like, no, 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 no. You have to explain to me. What is going on in there? She goes, this is not good. I said, no, no, no. What do you mean this is not good? She goes, this is not good. So I heard the doctor. The doctor says, anybody who doesn't belong in the room, take off. Bring in the parents. We're losing them. That moment changed my life. I walked in that room and my son took his last breath. And I said, no. I said, no. No, we're not doing this. He's just asleep. He's just asleep. That's it. And the nurse walks over there to me and she goes, hey, you mind if I clean him up for you? I said, yeah, you know, go ahead. And she cleaned him up. And I just remember I laid in bed with him for close to 2 hours, maybe a little bit longer. And I realized he wasn't waking up anymore. He was gone. Now, in the back of my head, I'm thinking to myself, I know what I just saw, but someone's playing a cruel joke on me. Maybe this is a dream, you know, a really, really bad dream. And I remember driving back from the hospital with his mom. We got all of me back. The sun is coming up. Now I got to call people and tell them what is going on because that part of my brain is like, this just happened. So I got to call people. I got to call my mom. I got to call my sister. I got to call all of his friends and tell them what just happened. And for the next 2 years, I couldn't tell you what happened. I was still, for some odd reason, I was still waiting for somebody to call me and say, hey, come pick up your son from school. Hey, you know, or his mom calling me saying, hey, come pick him up from my house. It's your time to come get him. Right. So I'm still waiting for that, but I couldn't tell you anything else that I did. All I know, I went to work. I came home. At that time I was working out, I started a personal training company. I had clients that I worked, that I was working with. So I did those regular things, but for the most part, I stayed home, mm-hmm. right? I had my own in-house gym. And then from there, I was like, you know, what am I supposed to do? And then get the news one day, this is July 23rd of 2018. I get the news. My sister calls me. She goes, "Hey, I need you to come home." "What do you mean?" "Mama just had a stroke. She's in the hospital." I said, "I'm on my way." I flew down. I'm thinking to myself, "She'll be all right. You know, when I get down there, she's gonna be all right." I was wrong about that one too. I got there, and then 2 days later, on my grandmother's birthday, my mama passed away. So now I come back with the reality of I'm an orphan in the world, man. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
I got no parents.
Yeah. You're an orphan and a parent has experienced the unthinkable.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I don't know how to deal with this. And my younger brother, he's gone too. My younger brother passed away 3 months after my father passed away. Now my mother's gone, you know, and it's like, and my son's gone. I'm like, oh man. All right. So, and this is
Tony,
where.
Tony, how old is your son? Just because I think you mentioned it, but I might, yeah, I just want to make sure our viewers got it. How old is your son when he
was 8 years old when he passed away.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, he was 8 when he passed away. That year that he passed away, he should have been 9. And, man, I tell you, man, when you in that world, now I had changed everything about me, right? I had changed everything about me. And, when all of this happened, I didn't have nowhere to run to anymore, right? I didn't know what I was supposed to do. I had planned out my the next 18 years out of my life to be a good father, right? You know, raise him to be a better man than me, to provide, to protect him from the world, even his mother. Now he's gone. Now my mom is gone. I got nobody. But I told myself, I said, I'm not going to let this be. I'm not going to let this beat me, right? You know what I'm saying? I'm a fighter, man. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to let this beat me. I was wrong. I was so very wrong because I went through that process and I said, you know what? I'm going to get a girlfriend. I think that'll be good, right? So I started online dating. I met this girl. She was from out of state, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, perfect opportunity to leave Colorado. And so we dated for a little bit and things were going really good. And so, you know, personal training company was starting to flourish and all those different things, but I wanted to run. I got to run. And so I told her, I called her up one day. I said, "Hey man, you know, what do you think about me moving to South Dakota?" She's like, "Yeah, come on." You know, and I packed up everything, left my place. And I moved out to South Dakota. Only to have 3 months later, I lost everything. Again, I lost everything. After 3 months, lost all my gym equipment. I lost everything. Because we had broke up. So now, I'm in South Dakota. I'm going back to Colorado. So I'm, you know, calling up my friends. They're like, "Come on back, man. You can. You know, we got a couch. You can sleep in the room and this, that, and other." And I came back and I'm bouncing around on people's couches. And something inside of me was so, so just damaged. I had no fight left in me, but I was good at pretending that I was okay. Right? And I go ahead. And I said, "You know what?
ain't gonna let this beat me, man. I still got a little fight left there. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, you know what? Look, I heard about these entrepreneurs, right? Let me go check these guys out. And I got involved with hanging out with some people that was all about starting businesses. They was entrepreneurs and stuff like that. And I learned a lot, but now I realized I was a lot different from them. A lot different. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was like, I don't really like hanging out with these cats, man. Something's not right about them, right? Now, don't get me wrong, I love the philosophy, but there's something wrong with these dudes, you know? And then I'm thinking to myself, it's like, damn, these people are sheep. I can't do it. I think I'm gonna do me, right? And I did. I said, you know what? No, I'm not gonna do me anymore. I think I'm done. I think I don't want to do this anymore. This life, don't want to do it. So I planned out my suicide for 2.5 months, right? And I came real close to doing it. I really did. I was 2 seconds away. I was in the middle of the desert, man. The Moab Desert. I was in the middle of it. I was like, this is it. I'm done. And I realized that thing that was damaged, I had no fear anymore of taking my own life. And I was 2 seconds away from pulling that trigger. And that voice that was at the beginning that moved me around, yeah, that voice came back, right? That voice said, Tony, I'm in the middle of the desert, pitch black. And I threw the gun, and I'm jumping up and I'm looking around. There's nobody there, right? And then I turned on the lights in the vehicle. And I'm looking around. There's still nobody there. So I sat down, and I turned off the lights. And I'm sitting there in a pitch black, and I was like, and the whole time, I'm thinking to myself, grab the gun, let's be done with this. Right? You know what I'm saying? You came out here for a reason. Grab the damn gun. Let's finish this. And then on the other side, that voice said, hey, now that I got your attention, we got to talk. And I'm talking to the voice now. Like, what do you want from me? What is it? I got nothing. What do you want from me? And the voice said, let me show you something. I said, hold on, before you show me something. No, we're not going to do this. You don't get to tell me anymore. I'm done. I was like, my life has been nothing but tragedy and trauma on top of tragedy and trauma, and nothing's working out. I just lost my son and my mother. I have no parents, my younger brother. I'm done. And the voice said, really? So let's talk about your life then. Well, when I was six, when I was molested, yeah, but had you not gone through that, you wouldn't have been able to help out that young man that went through something similar. See, you saw what you wanted to see, but you didn't see what was going on. I said, no. See, I'm trying to play the victim. I'm trying to play the victim now, right? Well, what about time when this happened? See, had you not gone through that, had you not experienced those things, you wouldn't have been able to help out mm-hmm. those people over there. I said, no. What about the times when I was homeless? Had you had been stable, I wouldn't have been able to move you around, put you where you needed to be. I made sure that you was taken care of. You just did not see it because you was too busy being wrapped up into what was going on with you. I said, well, what about this right here? What about this right here? And every time I did, that voice had something to come back with me, Dave. I was mad at the voice. I was so mad at the voice.
I'll tell you what, it sounds like you were going through a review of your life before he actually died. You know, that voice explained to you, here's the path that you took. Here's the reason that these things happened. Here's where you grew from this. I'm here to help you realize that with all of the tragedies that you've experienced, your true purpose is to go forward and be of service to help others who have gone through similar tragedies.
Yes.
And that day in the desert was the beginning to me of you reclaiming your life, although your life was going to be much, much different without your son, without your mom. But the experiences that you had from age 6 right up until the moment that your son died and your mother died shaped the person that you were going to become, one that was going to be of service to those who were going through the unthinkable tragedies. You know, the other thing that I thought about, Tony, and this was similar. You said you walked into your, and tell me your son's name again. Was it Jake?
Jake Steinbrecher.
When you walked into Jake's room and you saw him take his last breath, it was very similar for me with my daughter, Janine. I witnessed her last breath. And for years, that haunted me because yes. I think that's the last thing I'm going to remember about my daughter is watching her take her last breaths and die with me holding her hand. Reverend Patty Farina, who you know, who facilitated a magnificent, spiritually transformative experience that allowed me to find peace, showed me a different way to reframe this for me. She goes, what if you look at it as you weren't the last person to see her alive? You were the first person to transition her into a new experience of eternal bliss. And when you told me that you walked in there and you saw Jake witness his last breath, I'm thinking you were there to, he wanted you there. You needed to be there to usher him into eternal existence. So,
yeah. I mean, so. But that was the path though, right?
Yeah.
Was the part that I didn't see coming. Right. Because, you know, in those moments when I'm talking with this voice and it's laying out all of these different things and I'm trying to play the victim because, you know, we talked about this before, you know, in a person's life, you play three things. You can play the victim, the superhero, or the villain. Right. And it's a complete circle in our lives. But then I realized, in that moment, there's another section to it. You can become the observer, right? If you can step outside of yourself and look at your life for what it is from the outside looking in, it's you watching you going through your life.
Yep.
You can then begin to grow in certain areas that are necessary, and you can begin to build on certain things that can become a different set of truth, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what happened. I became that observer.
Yep.
And I looked at my life from a different perspective. And I said, you know what? Okay. And then the voice said, and this is where everything began to change. It said, ask me the hard question. And I said, what am I supposed to do now? And a voice said, look inside yourself. I put something in there for you. And I did. And I began to look at my life. And I began to read this thing and this information downloaded on me. And I didn't know what it was. Didn't know what it was. And so now, for the first time in my life, I'm excited. Because I don't know what it is. And I'm curious because I need to know. But I said, I better get some support. Because I know when I do this again, I'm going to be successful. So I drove back to Colorado with the premise of, I need to find a support group. I need to be around other men like myself because there's so much more I need to learn. But as I'm driving, all of these different things are coming about, right? You know what I'm saying? All of this stuff is like, I'm like, oh, I gotta go. I get back to Colorado. I called up a buddy of mine. He's like, man, where you been? I was like, man, you're not gonna believe this. And so I had to start being honest with people. I wasn't supposed to come back this weekend. What do you mean? I was gonna take my life. Really? Oh. So now they're looking at me. I'm like, really? I'm like, yeah. I played 3D chess with you guys, right? And no one really paid attention to me. And so I waited until I got a free moment and I was going to go up and I was going to do it. This was the weekend. And everybody just kind of looked. And they didn't say nothing. They just hugged me, cried. Because I realized in that moment too, people looked up to me. I didn't understand why. Why are you looking up to me? I'm a nobody. Don't look up to me because I'm going to disappoint you. And I realized that they were hurt that I didn't come to them. But I'm glad that I didn't come to him because I wouldn't be here now, right? And this, and the whole time, this thing that's inside of me began to bring itself out, and and then things started making sense. And I finally get into a group, and I go there, and I'm thinking to myself, like, "Where's the men at? This is the place of men, women, and children. Where's the men? There's no men here." So I went to another one. Same thing, no men. So I asked the one, I said, "Hey, do the men come on a different day?" "Oh, no, they stopped coming. We used to have them. They stopped coming." And I looked around and it dawned on me. I know why the men aren't here. Men don't talk around women. Mm-hmm. Bing, that light bulb went off again. And I walked out of there. I said, "Man, I want to do something because I need to be around other men like myself. I need to learn." And as life would have it, you know, it gave me different opportunities. My gifts started to manifest itself into the world. I became a beacon. And then one day I said, "You know what? I'm starting a nonprofit." Dave, I've never done anything like this before, right? Never. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what I'm doing. So I'm making phone calls. I'm calling people, and then I called this place, and they said, "Do you have a social media?" "Social media? What do you mean? What do you have Facebook? Do you have Instagram? What do you have a LinkedIn?" I said, "I don't have a Facebook. I don't even know what the Instagram thing is, and I definitely don't know what the LinkedIn is. There's like no Instagram and LinkedIn." I was like, "I don't know anything about that." They're like, "Do you have Twitter?" I said, "Who's Twitter and tweeting? I don't know what all of this stuff is."
Well, from what I have seen, you know very well what it is. You are very masterful around social media, and that's a big part of your presence is right now.
Well, but you know what? I didn't at first. I didn't have a Facebook. I didn't have any of this stuff when I was raising my son. None of it. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know how any of this worked or anything like that. So when the guy asked me these things, I was like, "Oh man." He was like, "Well, I'm gonna tell you a secret. You're going to have to build the nonprofit and have it operating without it being a nonprofit. So let me get this straight. You want me to build something and not actually have it?" It's like, "Yeah." I said, How am I supposed to do that?" They were like, "I don't know. Figure it out." I said, "Okay." So I began to do research, and I'm such an introvert, right? You know, I get involved with some. Now I'm telling people about this nonprofit, right? You know, I'm telling my buddy about this. I'm gonna do this nonprofit. He goes, "What you gonna call it?" I said, "I don't know. Memories of Me." So we looked it up. It's already taken. So I'm thinking to myself. Then it dawned on me. What is the one thing that men keep sacred and safe? Our memories. We can keep this up here because we don't carry around pictures, right? We keep our memories up here because you can't take my memory and use it against me. Mm-hmm. Ding, there it goes again, right? Memories of Us, LTD, Grief Support for Men. And that's when I started bouncing around with that. I was like, "Well, now that I have the name of the nonprofit, I need to get the word out there. But how am I supposed to do that? How am I supposed to do that?" Right? I'm an introvert. I don't want to be around people. I tell you what, I told the voice, I said, "Look here, I'll build it, but you bring me somebody that I can teach and they can do the work. I'll teach them. I'll be there in the shadows. I don't want to be known like this." And the voice said, "Ha ha, yeah, right." So I started, you know, from one conversation with another person that I was working with, he introduced me to this woman, and she was starting off in the nonprofit world. And then from there, I got introduced to another person, and they got me into doing these, going to these little seminars and, you know, and I'm speaking to these people as if this nonprofit is just, mm-hmm. it's up and running. Right. I didn't know what I was doing. Right. I used to carry around. See, my flyer used to be like 12 pages. that I wrote and put together with my story and all the different things that I was going to do, right? I didn't know. I didn't know. And so now I got the social media. We're learning about social media and I'm putting all of this stuff together. And I still don't know what I'm doing. I still don't. And then I go to a class, I get certified in this, and I go to another class and I get certified in that. And all kinds of things, right? You know, so now I'm out in the open. People know who I am. I'm like, oh no, this is not what I wanted. Who's gonna try to get me now? Right? Who's gonna try to get me? And then I went, screw it. This feels good. For the first time in my life, I feel good. I'm gonna move forward with this thing. And I began to do this. And then as life would have it, and into an office space. And COVID hit. Right? COVID hit. I was like, oh, I just turned everything virtual. And then, when I turned everything virtual, I started podcasting. I started the Memories of Us podcast, right? And yep. I got a team. And then from there, I had the crazy idea. And this is when I met Mr. Dave. You know, I said, I'm going to start a global grief conference. That was in 2022. And that's when I first met you. And that was the first time it's ever been done. It's the first time I've ever done one. And then from there, the Global Grief Network was formed. And beautiful friendships was made. And I realized that I wasn't by myself anymore. I was around people just like me. It was a challenge. And it was a beautiful, beautiful journey getting to where it is today. And to be able to help men like myself from across the world. And I started the new podcast, the Grief Let's Talk About It podcast 10 months ago, where we was doing panel discussions. Dave, you've been on a few of those. You've been rock solid with me. I've written a book that went an international bestseller. I've done a movie. I've done more conferences, more webinars, more seminars. And it went from me not wanting to be out in the open and people not knowing me, to where I sit back now, and the reality of it is, I did something that a lot of people didn't do. Mm-hmm. And now I'm well known. And don't ask me how that happened, because I don't know. I've always just stayed in my lane, you know. And then I have beautiful people, friends, my brother from another mother, Mr. Dave Roberts. I got Mario, you know, there's Claire and Jenny. And, you know, there were so many people that we formed this network with, and it just became a combination. Then we did our second conference, right? And then it's just been growing from there, right? And I look back on my life now, and I couldn't say this before, but I don't regret nothing I've ever had to go through. And I can see the true blessings in the path that I had to walk. Because for the first time in my life, I realized that my life was never about me. It was never about me. It was about the people that we served. It's about the people that we bring along the way. But of course, it's the reality of that part too, because the reality of it is, and I'm the seasonal one. Yeah. I'm the one that comes in and out of people's lives to give them what they need and until it's time for me to move on. And with that being known, you know, I realized that it's okay when people have to go and walk their path in life. It's not personal. It's a beautiful thing.
It is. And, you know, there's a teaching from my favorite book on the Afterlife of Billy Fingers by Annie Kagan. All roads ultimately lead to the same place. Yeah. It's the present moment. Everything we did in our past, good or bad, is orchestrated the present of our of our creation and the future of our inspiration. And as you also know, that also refers to Crow medicine, which in Native American teachings is about honor the past as your teacher, honor the present as your creation, and honor the future as your inspiration. We can never ignore our past. We can always learn from it. And everything that's happened to you, Tony, and everything that's happened to me has all been based on past decisions that we made that led us to the present moment and that led us to each other. One last question, my friend, and I can go on for another 3 hours with you, and you know that.
We knew this was going to happen.
Oh, absolutely. We throw time out the window when we talk. But one last question. For individuals that want to align with your journey, align with your mission, want to get in touch with you, want to find out more about you, what is the best way for them to do that?
They can find me on Facebook as Memories of Us LTD. They can find me on Instagram as Men's Grief Support. They can find me on LinkedIn as Tony Lynch, of course. And if they want to check out the podcast, they can find me on YouTube as the Grief Let's Talk About It podcast. And we got a lot of great things coming up. You know, I got three more book deals that I'm doing. So you guys are going to see a lot more of that as well. Got the summit coming up next month. Got some conferences coming up. So you guys can check those out as well. And, you know, some true blessings. You guys are going to see me on the big screen one day, cause I do have a movie deal coming up. And,
just remember to thank me for making you, you know, for giving you the platform, you know, and adopt me between now and then, particularly if it's like multi-million dollar figures, I'll push for you to adopt me as your older brother.
You know what? You got that. You got Perfect. That. I definitely adopt you. Be like, come on, Dave, come on.
Hell yeah, there is a resemblance, right?
This is true. I've been trying to tell people this. Do they not? Can they not tell us apart?
Really? Right? Can't you tell? Can't you tell that we live alike?
This is a beautiful thing, man. You know, and you know, for those people out there, you know, although I work with men, we do have a network of people. So it doesn't matter if you're a woman or a child, you know, we have something for everyone, right? So, you know, our motto is that we don't want you out here suffering alone. And if you need somebody, we're going to make sure that you have the right type of support through the Global Grief Network. And so, you know, that's been my mission in life, is to make sure that I give back, make sure that I serve and fulfill my contract in this world. And just to be the best version of myself and tell them, call it home. Mm-hmm. And just to make sure, and I'm a firm believer in this, to make sure I leave people better than what I found.
And that reminds me of Lakota saying that, I think I'm going to probably paraphrase because I'm not sure I'm getting the exact words right, but it goes something like this: we will be forever known by the tracks that we leave behind. And I add to that, make sure that the tracks are meaningful and are impactful.
Yes. That is actually the path of the lone wolf. So the Lakota saying, the Cherokee, the Kiowa, the Apache, and a lot of different tribes, you know, that phrase right there is very known, you know, across there. Is the path of the lone wolf. The lone wolf is the one that's constantly on the path on himself, but it's the people that he come across, he or she comes across, that he can make a decision whether or not if he's going to see them as prey or protect them, because the lone wolf has no path, right? But it's what you leave. It's how you leave people. People won't remember your name, but they will always remember the way that you made them feel. So you leave a lasting impression inside of their head.
I tell my students all the time, people are going to remember you more by your actions, by what you do, than by what you say.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay.
So make sure that your actions come from a place of integrity and honor.
And authenticity.
And absolutely. Right.
You have to ask yourself on a daily basis, how are you going to show up? Are you going to show up with the habits that you developed over other people? Or are you going to show up as who you are?
Mm-hmm.
And the authentic you. Because the goal in life is to have the best human experience that you can possibly have in this world. And to have people to walk with you,
mm-hmm.
to share with you a little bit of who they are, so you can become the best version of yourself.
And authenticity is the way to go. That's what draws people in, along with genuineness, along with warmth, along with compassion, and mm-hmm. along with the willingness to be present for our stories and not all parts of our narrative, like with yourself, Tony, and with myself, are pretty, but it's part of our narrative. It's part of who we are. It's part of who made us who we are today.
Yes.
But man, with that, like I said, I can go on for another 2 hours, but it's been just so much fun having you on the podcast today. And man, I look forward to doing it again sometime.
Of course. We got to save the time to have you on mine, right? You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely look forward to that. So, man, thank you, Dave. You know, I've been looking forward to having this conversation with you and sharing my story with your audience, man. I appreciate the privilege and the honor that you've given me today. It means a lot.
Yeah, it means a lot to me, too, that you took the time to be on the podcast. And I would always see you as a valued contributor to the mission of the podcast. So thank you again, Tony.
You're welcome. You're very welcome.
And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.